Well, I want to thank you for coming out and taking your time out of your busy schedules to come be here for this conference. And appreciate you making it a priority because we feel like this is an important conference and we feel like what you do is very important. And so we want to make this a very good experience for you. So I was asked to talk about using byproducts and crop residues to limit feed cows in confinement with some, and to share with you some of the results of some research that we've been doing at the University of Nebraska. So I'm on this project, but also Rick Rasby is on this project and Terry Kloppenstein. And then Matt Luby and Galen Erickson have been kind enough to let us use their feedlot pen space for cows. And apparently that's, you know, kind of hard for them, but they've been really big about it. And then Jason Warner is our grad student that's been on this project. And then we were able to acquire some funds from the Ken and Carolyn Ng Foundation that allowed us to expand this project from what we were doing initially. So just to start out, I want to talk to you a little bit about how stress impacts grass growth. So when we graze, we have a pointer, but when we graze, the growth that you see above ground is reflected in root mass accumulation below the ground. And when we give the plants time to rejuvenate and regrow, then we get a nice amount of root mass accumulation to go with that. But when we get into situations where the plant is stressed and we continue to graze on that, then we don't really give that plant an opportunity to come back and develop some of that root depth. And a good example of a situation like this would be during the horrible drought conditions of 2012, and then, of course, the effects of that extended into this year as well. So when we continue to leave those cattle out there and they see that little sprig of green grass and they come back around there, and we have this attitude of, well, maybe it'll rain, we'll just hold on. This is what we're doing to the root depth. Well, when we do that and then we get into what we've had now where we've depleted the moisture supply in the soil, then, of course, that little bitty plant there doesn't have the root depth for how far down the soil moisture is after those years of stress. And so that plant will probably die. And so confining those cows to get them off of that grass becomes about the only way to really allow some of those plants to rejuvenate. And I think we're used to chronic drought conditions in this part of the country, and so we know that cyclicity comes around, and we need to have a plan for getting those cattle out of there to allow that grass to recuperate. And we understand that that is one of the big things that we face on a regular basis that reduces availability of our grass. But there are other things that are maybe not so cyclic, but maybe are starting to be a bigger and bigger trend for us that reduce grass availability. And that would include more and more crop production acres being put in where grass used to be, and more urbanization as our population grows, and that takes over where we used to graze some cows. And so as those things either cycle through or become a bigger part of the norm, what happens is the value of the grass we do have continues to increase. So we know that we need to confine cows to get them off of grass when we're in a drought, things we need to do different to save the grass. But we may need to start rethinking the utilization of our grass. So part of this research that we're doing is not only to get us through drought things, but to help us think outside the box. Do we need to think through the way we do our system now? Do we need to change what we're doing? Do we need to consider what other systems might be the best utilization for this grass? Do we need to think about using our grass for the animals that make the most gain so that we have something to sell for the use of that grass? There was a time when we felt like the cheapest gain, the cheapest place to maintain our cows was on our grass. That was the cheapest place to be. As this grass becomes more leases on it become higher, availability of it's less, is that really the cheapest place to maintain the cow? Is that what we want to do with that grass after we pay that much for it? So maybe it's that we want to use the grass for gain and residues for maintenance. But if nothing else that you come away with today, I hope that you think through all your possibilities going forward for the future. And you think outside the box and you think about where you want to be in the future and that you are prepared to be set up to still be in the business. So we are doing a confinement feeding study based on this concept that maybe there is a better way to maintain the cow. In the study that we have going on in two locations at the University of Nebraska, the cows are confined 12 months out of the year, their whole production cycle, they're in confinement. Because it's a research project. And so we need to understand all the things that you may face if you're doing it for a given segment of that production cycle. So I'm not advocating that we have cows in confinement 12 months out of the year, but in the study we're doing this so that we can study all of the segments of that. But there may be a systems approach that's going to work better for you. There may be part of the year they're out on residues, part of the year they're on grass. Maybe the calves are weaned early and they go to grass and the cows go back in confinement. Every person here is in a unique situation. You have different resources than the person beside you. You have a different set of cows. You have to figure out what's going to work best for you. But this is the thing that we have been working on. So one of the things that makes this work for us, or would have to make it work, is limit feeding. Okay, so we're in confinement, but we're limit feeding. But we want to maintain the weight and the condition score on these cows and not feed them everything they want to eat. Because I think every one of you in here understand that when you confine a cow and feed her everything she wants to eat, she will clean out your resources very quickly. So there are some concepts that to this that I want to make sure you understand. Energy-dense byproducts can be mixed with low-quality residues, and usually, depending on the drought we're in or the situation you're in or the location you're in, those are two of your cheaper sources of feed, okay? Energy-dense byproducts and low-quality crop residues. When we put enough energy in that diet, we can actually limit the dry matter that they're fed and not feed them ad lib, but we can still maintain cow condition. Okay, so there's some key concepts. There's really three key concepts that I want to go through with you today so that you understand this a little bit. You have to know, number one, the nutrient content of your feedstuffs. And I know that any of you that work with your extension personnel in your state, they harp on you all the time about, well, takes feed samples and send them to a commercial laboratory and then bring me that analysis and I'll do your rations for you. And that's important. You need to do that. But when we start doing some of these things with byproducts, there's a little bit of an issue with that. When you send your samples into a commercial laboratory and they test them, the TDN value that you get back on that is actually calculated off of the ADF content. And so it's not an actual in vitro dry matter disappearance digestibility number. It's a calculation. And for most of your forages, your hays and things, that works. That's a pretty close estimate to the digestibility, and that's pretty accurate. But when we get into some of these byproducts that have had the starch removed from them, and so they're a very concentrated fiber source, although a very highly digestible fiber source, when you do that calculation, then that TDN value it does not come out right. And so what we encourage people to do is to use TDN values that universities have done for these different byproducts in feeding trials, okay? Because that fiber, there is a lot of fiber in it, so that would decrease that TDN value on that commercial laboratory analysis, but because it's so highly digestible, the cattle may get quite a bit more out of it than that value. And if you underestimate that value, then you're going to cost yourself money because you're going to be feeding more than you really need to feed. If you underestimate it, then the cows may be losing weight. So these are just some values that I've put together and this is in your proceedings, that would be from feeding trials, either from the University of Nebraska, Kansas State did some of these, but they're all in your proceedings. There is a reference to the either the beef reports or the research reports that those would have come from, and these would be the recommendation in a high energy value, high forage diet that you would want to use for the energy value of these byproducts. And most of you are probably looking at corn and saying, well, it's not 83, it's 90. But when you put a starch like that in a high forage diet, then you start getting negative associative effects on fiber digestion. And so you're not getting as much energy out of that corn as you would in a finishing diet. And so you need to account for that when you do that. So if corn's cheap, it's certainly an option to use, but you need to understand what that value is. And before your head's swimming, I will just say you can always go to your extension personnel and say, help me develop this diet, and they'll make sure you do. So another important concept besides understanding the nutrient value of your feeds that you're working with is understanding the nutrient requirements of your cows. So I have a picture up here of a cow that obviously is just starting lactation with a little baby by her side, and then the cows down in the bottom are cows that are bred, but their calves have been removed, so we don't have the requirements of lactation anymore. And those two cows have tremendously different energy requirements. So what happened to some people during this drought when as range specialists, we kept saying, you need to delay turnout. Don't turn those cows out. You're going to have to hold them off that grass. They continued to feed those cows like they knew how to feed them in the wintertime when there's snow on the ground. And we had cows losing a lot of condition because they knew how to feed for the protein needs. And protein is no longer, while we need to meet that protein need, it's no longer the first limiting nutrient for that cow. Once she reaches lactation, energy becomes a bigger factor for her. So this graph just kind of illustrates that for you. These would be our June 15th calving cows. Doesn't really matter. You just start over here, and the little red line goes up, and so that illustrates peak lactation. Doesn't really matter when they calve. They're going to hit peak lactation about 8 weeks after that. And then the blue line represents those cows that would continue to nurse their calf until 6 months out there, and then you see where that drops off. But the red line would illustrate taking that calf away about 90 days, and you see how that energy level, that need for energy immediately drops when you remove lactation. And what happens to some producers is, what you don't realize is you're always meeting that need, but normally they go out to grass, and so that energy need is being met in that high-quality grass. And so it's there, and you're normally meeting it, you're just not normally feeding it by hand. And so there was some people that got in a little bit of a pickle when they didn't make that transition to that energy need when they still had to hold those cows off. So if you got lactating cows in confinement, you have to account for that. And there's ways to do that. We can manipulate the diet to meet those changing needs. Now, if that calf stays with that cow very long, you have to start accounting for what he's eating too. But we can do that a couple of ways. So on this slide, what I have is a couple of diet options. Well, actually, I've worn two. But on the left side there, it says diet dry matter ratio. Okay, so 57-43, that would be the dry matter percentages or ratios of the feed that's then given in the next column over. So then you have the pounds of dry matter, not the pounds as is, because if you're using wet feeds, that's really going to mess you up. You got to convert that to the actual pounds that you feed. But on a dry matter basis, the cow that's just gestating, no lactation, there's how many pounds of that you would feed her. And then if she's lactating, you've got to increase that sum for lactation. And then if that calf is a couple of months old, we have data that suggests that he's starting to eat 1% of his body weight in forage by the time he's 2 to 3 months old. So he's starting to eat some forage too. Well, if he's not out in a pasture, he's not on forage, and the cow's in confinement with him, you have to start putting his feed in the bunk as well or in a creep feeder or something. But you have to account for his needs as well. And so there's a couple of ways that you can do that. If you took this first diet you would just increase the pounds of dry matter that you feed them as that need increases. Or, for example, on the one that's a 30-70 distiller's straw, you would feed that gestating cow 19.2 pounds. You could change that diet to the one down here that's 20% distillers, 35% straw, and 45% beet pulp. You could change to that diet. It's more energy dense. And then for the cow with the 60-day-old calf, we'd feed 19.4. So you'd still be feeding that same amount of dry matter, but the energy you're supplying would be more because you increase the density, the energy density of the diet. So there's lots of options that you can do to meet those needs and still be limiting. So even though you're increasing the dry matter pounds, you're still feeding them under 2% of their body weight. So it's still, this is not ad lib diet. It's still a limit-fed diet, but it's not as limiting. So I wanted to show you an example of a couple of diets from a trial that we did. And we had either 60% straw, 20% wet distillers, and 20% beet pulp in the diet, or we compared that to where we only had 35% straw, and then we had 20% distillers, and then 45% of the beet pulp. And I wanted to show you those diets because I wanted to help you see that byproducts don't always have to mean ethanol byproducts. There are some that are regionally available that you may be able to put into, you may be able to get it, and it may be a pretty cheap source for you, and you can work it in a diet. You just have to know what the energy value of that byproduct is and any limitations to feeding it, and then you can work that into the diet. For us out in western Nebraska, that's kind of helpful because, one, we do have the beet pulp available, and actually for us, the wet distillers can be kind of limiting for cow-calf people. We don't necessarily have an unlimited supply of that, so it's nice to be able to use something else. So it just depends on what's available for you. And the other thing that I wanted to point out about this is that while beet pulp may be something that's regionally available, it's also seasonally available. And so there's certain times of year that you can get it, and you may want to bag a diet, mix a diet up, and then bag it in an ag bag or something. And what I like about both these diets is the dry matter of the diet is under 50% on both of these, and that makes it easy to get it stored in an ag bag and get the air squeezed out of it and it'll store better. So it may be, depending on where you are or what you have available, that there's a time of year that some things are available for you, or they're very cheap that time of year, but that's not necessarily the time of year that you need it. Well, then there's some options that you can do to store some of those things for when you do need it. The other reason that I wanted to show you these two diets is when we compared these, and we also compared this to a limit-fed alfalfa diet, and there was really no statistical differences in the performance of the cows. So it doesn't really matter what you put in that diet as long as the energy needs of that cow are met. Okay, so you have to, so again, it becomes critical that you know the energy value of the commodities that you're working with and you know the energy needs of the cow you're trying to feed, and then you can put that together, and it's whatever you have available. You can maintain her body condition on that if you can meet those. So we had done several studies. Rick Rasby had done one, and I had done two or three where we were looking at some of these different things that we could feed to Rick's cows were, they weren't pregnant and they weren't lactating. Mine were gestational but not lactating. And so then we were ready to move into this, you know, can we actually feed a lactating cow in confinement, limit feeder, and can we calve out in confinement? And so this was the, what I'm going to show you is the first year's worth of data on the trial that we did. We had half the cows at the MEAD, the ARDC, the animal facility that we have outside of Lincoln and close to Meade, Nebraska. So that would be on the eastern side of Nebraska where they have more humidity and they have more rain and just a little different climate than what we have in western Nebraska. And so then the other half of the cows were out at the feedlot at Scott's Bluff. Okay, so two different environments for that. And so the lactation diet after 90 days was 60% wet distillers and 40% either wheat straw or corn stalks. We used wheat straw in Scott's Bluff, and they used corn stalks on the eastern side of the state because that's what we had available. And so then the half the cows had their calf weaned off of them when the calf was 90 days of age. The others kept their calf for about till 180 days, 6 months of age, more traditional weaning time. So the early weaned cows got 15 pounds of dry matter, while the late weaned pairs got 22. So that was the calf's needs as well as the cow's needs together. And what we found in the first year, and we're about halfway through the second year's data, so we'll see when we start putting this all together. But really, we had some differences here and there, but we didn't get a clear-cut difference between the conditions of the early weaned or the late weaned. By the time we got to the normal weaning time period, it was not a real clear-cut difference between the ones that kept their calves and the ones that were early. So the condition score of those cows was either a little over 5 to start out at mead and right at 5 for us, the normal weaning time period. So when we got to the where the calves were 6 months old, it was a little over 5 for them, and ours were about that as well. So their cows lost just a little bit of condition score. Ours gained just a little bit. But really, they were all maintained regardless of when the calf was weaned. They were maintained right around that 5 moderate condition score. So the early weaned, early weaning time period, the calves were not different. And then we did not have a weaning effect on the weights, had a little differences, little statistical differences here and there, but again, and not a real clear-cut difference in the first year's worth of data on the calves that were early weaned versus those that were normal weaned. And this shows the dry matter intake. In 1 year's data, the early weaned cows would be the dark blue, so that's how much we fed them. Then the early weaned calves that were not with those cows but were their calves, whatever they chose to eat ad lib is what we gave them. And then we took those two values and put them together and fed them to the pairs that were not weaned. So we tried to keep intake similar to make an energy comparison to see if there were differences in their performance if they were fed the same. Okay? So early weaned cows got the 15 pounds. The early weaned calves got whatever they wanted to eat, and whatever they wanted to eat was what we then fed the pairs that were still together to keep that the same. And this shows it, this maybe just makes it a little clearer that here's what we were feeding the cow intake in the red, and then during the time that the calves were, the early weaned calves in there before we weaned everything, that was their intake on top of that. But basically, because performance was really not different, those cows all maintained about the same body weight, then early weaning didn't really give us an energy, feed energy savings advantage. Maybe a good management tool, but it really didn't make a lot of difference in whether you put the feed through the cow or not. We'll see when we get a couple of years' data together if that changes any. But just wanted to also share with you the pregnancy data in the first year, and those were not statistically different. But there are some things to consider when you are breeding in confinement. You may have cows close to a handling facility depending on where in confinement you are. Confinement can be defined a little loosely, but assuming that they're close to some facilities, this may be a time that is very helpful to you to implement synchronization protocols or an AI program. And I think in your proceedings that we put a link to a web article that Rick Funston and I wrote on feeding and breeding cows in confinement that you can access. And if you need cleanup bulls, or if you just decide to just run the bulls with them, you do need to think about the amount of feed that the bulls are going to need while they're in there with the cows. So regardless of how much dry matter you would feed those bulls would depend on the energy density of the diet that you chose to feed, but the pounds of TDN that they would need would be between 15 and 18 pounds, and that's just going to depend on the size and the condition of the bulls going into breeding. And then you do need to account for them being in the pen, so you're going to need another 2 feet of bunk space for the time that the bulls are in there. And we've had a lot of questions about whether or not you can actually put bulls in confinement with cows and actually get them bred and not have them just spend the whole time fighting or whatever. And so I was out at the feedlot before we pulled bulls three weeks ago, and took some pictures. And this is the black bull standing there at the feed bunk with the cow who's eating, with the calf who's eating. I know to you it doesn't look like a family picture because you know how agriculture works, but it still was kind of funny how they were all standing there together. So anyway, that's a side note. Anyway, my point being that the bull's not pushing the calf out of the way, and the bulls were not fighting in the pen, and we did get cows bred. So I want to talk just a little bit on the whole concept of early weaning, because I think sometimes when people think early weaning, they're thinking very early weaning. And again, as I mentioned earlier, the early weaning that we did at 90 days didn't necessarily result in a feed energy savings, but that doesn't mean it can't be used as a very effective management tool, because it may be that high-quality grass that we were talking about earlier, that may be where you want to take those calves and then be able to put those cows on back on that 15 pounds of dry matter of a really low residue mixed with some byproducts or something. So it doesn't mean it can't be a pretty effective management tool, but what is early weaning? And so sometimes people talk about early weaning as before 45 days, and usually if people do that, it's because the cows are in very, very thin condition, like 4 or below, and they're worried about them starting cyclicity again, and removing the calf takes away lactation needs and then may jumpstart cyclicity. But after 45 days, just removing the calf doesn't necessarily mean that it'll start cyclicity, and especially not necessarily if the cow is in a moderate condition score. So the 45-day, before 45-day thing is kind of a, I guess in my mind, more of an emergency type thing. But anything less than your traditional 180-205-day weaning weight, it really is early weaning. And so it may be that what works for you is to do it somewhere between 90 days and 180. Depends on where you're going with the calves or what resources you have for them or where you want to go back with the cows or what you want to do. But there's some flexibility in what we consider early weaning. The only thing I would remind you, though, is if you want to maintain gain that you would get while a calf is on a cow, you've got to provide him in the feed that you're now going to give him that same energy and protein level that he would have been getting out of the milk if you want to maintain that same level of gain. So I wanted to go through pricing TDN with you just a little bit, and this is in your proceedings too. So if you're kind of like, you know, lady, I really didn't follow your math when you were up there, it's all good because I put it in the book. So I hate doing pricing in a group and in different audiences like this, because invariably whatever I put together for a price of something, somebody has to come up and tell me, well, there's no way I can get that for that. And I'm like, okay, that wasn't my point. My point was I wanted to show you how to check this out, how to do this. And probably many of you do this for protein pricing in the winter. I hope you do. I hope you price your protein supplements this way to figure out which is the most economical protein source for you. You can do that on a TDN basis too. So for example, by the time you need to put all the trucking charges in there and the shipping and all that, so then you need to break that out on a ton basis. So whatever it costs you to actually get that product to you, and then if you want to include some grinding and then delivery to the cows and that kind of thing, you probably have to put your own numbers in that to what you think it costs you to do that. But then you can break that out on a ton of feed. So you take that, and that's your as-is tonnage, and then you need to divide that by the decimal of the dry matter. So in the first one, we took 100 divided by 0.35 because it's 35% dry matter on the wet distiller. So we put that on a decimal basis. That gave us what that is on a dry matter basis. And that's kind of a handy little comparison for some things too. If some of the supplements you have available to you are modified distillers or wet distillers or dry, you can compare all that without the water in it. And so then I want to divide that number, now that I've got it on a dry matter basis, I want to divide that by its TDN value. So we divided by 1.08 because the TDN is 108% on the distillers based on the feeding trials, okay? So then that tells me what my commodity is per ton of TDN available in it, and then I put it on a per pound basis. So then you can compare some of those things just depending on what it actually cost you to get that hay there or the commodity that you're buying, whatever. So the other thing I think is kind of important for you to do is compare the cost of the diet in this situation, because we're the whole thing that's supposed to make this work is the fact that you have so much energy in the diet, you can limit the amount you actually feed. So I think it's important also for you to make those comparisons. And again, that's in your proceedings, how I walked through each one of those. But you can compare in this particular diet, although those were pretty close on a TDN basis, we had 13 cents versus 15 cents or whatever. But when we put in there how much we actually have to feed, then because we're feeding so much less of the 57-43 ratio of the distillers and straw than we would the hay, it actually starts to kind of add up per cow. And again, that would be for a gestating cow who doesn't have a very high requirement. So please don't come up here and tell me that there's no way in Hades that we're going to feed these cows for under $2 a day, because I know that if she's still in confinement when she's lactating and has a calf. So that's my disclaimer. So our experience, I just thought I'd share with you some of the practical things that you may have questions about on how you actually pull this off when you have to keep these cows in some confinement. Some positive things that we came away from this with was that the calves learned to eat with their mothers out of the bunk surprisingly early. Now, whether they were just piddling with the feed or not, they did know that what the feed truck was and what was putting up, what was in there. We did, before 90 days, we did have some alfalfa pellets in a creep feeder at the back of the pen. They didn't eat very much of them, but they nibbled at them a little bit. Maybe that helped start rumen function. Don't know. I do know those calves used it for a shade a lot. Remember, these are summer-born calves in a feedlot without trees and without hills to get behind, and so that kind of became more important than we thought about when we first started the trial. Water is very important. Again, these calves were born in June, July. It was hot, and they don't do a real great job of regulating their body temperature the first couple of days that they're born. And so we found that the heat was pretty stressful on some of them if they were born when it was really hot. And they do drink water pretty fast. And we didn't have any calves dehydrate on our trials, but this year we actually put a little tub of water back there where the creep feeder was, where the cows couldn't get it, because when it was really hot and they're in a feedlot pen with a fairly small tank, the cows were hanging the tank and the calves weren't getting much of an opportunity to get up there. So we did make sure they had water. Sometimes people think that as long as the calf is nursing, he's getting pretty plenty of liquids, and really, especially when it's hot, that's not the case. So that was something that we learned. You have to have 2 feet of bunk space for adult cattle and another foot and a half for these calves, and a pen space of about 350 to 400 square feet per head. And I had somebody at the confinement cow conference in Lincoln say, well, what's the minimum space I can get away with? 350 to 400 square feet per head. So anyway, but that is, I mean, you need to give them a little space. So here's some examples of him eating. As you see the little calf stretching his neck to try to reach that feed bunk. You need to make sure they can actually reach that feed. And if the feed's kind of toward the back of the bunk, can the calf still reach it? We need to make sure that they can get up. Do we need to modify the bunk a little bit, or do we need to do something to the pad so they can reach? You need to think through those things or watch those calves a little bit. Same with water. If the water flow is restricted so the cows come up there and drink the tank down and the calf can't reach it, he's not going to get a drink. If the tank's not big enough and they're pushing them all around, they're not going to get a drink. So you need to kind of be aware of those things if you have to do this. Now, everything I've shown you is in a feedlot because that's what we did. We confined them in our feedlots, in our research feedlots. But that doesn't mean that confinement has to be in a feedlot. You can get a little bit creative with this. You can do it on a pivot corner. You can do it on a stubble field. You know, wherever. You can do it in a pasture, but you got to understand that where we're limit feeding, if they have an opportunity to continue to graze, they're going to want to do that. And that pasture that you have them in is going to pretty much become a sacrifice pasture. So you got to decide where you want to do that if you're not going to do it in a more traditional confinement setting. They're going to continue to graze. It's going to suffer overgrazing. So if there's somewhere else you could go, that's always the better option. So where you are, whether you have bunks or whether you're stringing this on the ground under a hot fence, whatever, you need to allow that space that needs to be 2 foot linear foot for cow, wherever it is. We added limestone just a little bit, 0.3 pounds for each cow, because we were using a lot of distillers that's high in phosphorus, and we needed to get that calcium phosphorus ratio back more to a 1-to-1 or 1.5-to-1. And so we did add some limestone because of how much distillers we were feeding. We add rumensin. You can do that up to 200 milligrams per head per day is legal. So if you are a fan of Bovatec, I have nothing against that except that it is not approved for the mature cow. So that's why I put rumensin. But you need to monitor sulfur and fat levels. We had no problems with sulfur in the distiller's grains. You usually don't in a high roughage diet, but if you're using condensed solubles or something and it was sitting in a tank, it may settle. You may have gotten a batch that was right after they flushed and cleaned with sulfuric acid. You could have high sulfur, so you need to check that before you feed. We used a grind size, or we have used grind sizes anywhere from 3 to 7 inches. You can do this in a vertical mixer. It's been done successfully that way, too. So you can get creative with this. You don't actually have to do it the way we did in the feedlot. But if you think about it, feedlots are set up to do this. And unfortunately, some of you who aren't in an area that has much for farming, you're just range, you may not have the equipment to do some of this mixing and feeding. You may not have the sacrifice area to do it. So if that's the case, what about sending them to a commercial feedlot for part of the year? Commercial feedlots may have some empty pens, and they may be willing to feed cows or pairs. There's going to be a yardage charge to that, or maybe there's feed charges are going to vary. So you're going to have to sit down with them and figure out what they would charge you to do this, and can you afford to do that? None of this is going to necessarily be the cheapest way to do something, but like in the drought that we just came through, these kind of options kind of helped some people not have to liquidate the entire herd. And depending on what your system is, some of this partial confinement part of the year may be the better place to be with those cows. You're just going to have to figure out what's going to work for you. What the feedlot charges is going to depend on the labor that's involved. As we mentioned earlier, this is a good time to AI or synchronize. Well, if they have to do that for you, that there may be more charge to that than just feeding. But you got to sit down with them and talk it through. There's also a mindset shift that has to occur for a feedlot to do this for you. Okay? And you're going to be the one that's going to have to say, this is how it's going to have to be done. Because in a feedlot, we have a thing against slick bunks, okay? We want little crumbs of feed left in the bottom of the bunk all the time, and I guarantee you if you're limit feeding cows in feedlot, the bunk is going to be empty by the time the feed truck's, you know, 4 bunks past or whatever. And they have a hard time with that. So they wanna feed them more because that's what they're used to seeing. They're also used to seeing cattle get fat. So they have a hard time when a cow's in condition score 5. Our feedlot guys, the first 2 years I did this, every day they were like, Carla, the cows they look bad. And I'd go out there and I'd look at them and I'm like, they're in a 5. But they're bony. And I'm like, no, they're moderate condition score for cow. And they want them to look fat because that's what you do in a feedlot, okay? So you're going to have to fight that a little bit, and you're going to have to say, this is what I want them fed, and this is why, and this is what I want. And your cheapest resources are always your best, but they're going to have to be limit fed. And you're going to have some conversations with the commercial people if you do that. The other important thing is consistency and feeding time. The cows can't be on the bottom of the list. Oh, yeah, somebody needs to go feed those cows. They have to be on a schedule, just like the feedlot cattle are on a schedule, because that's one thing that makes this work, is that those cows become fairly content, even though they're pretty limit fed. They know when the feed truck's going to come by. They know when the feed's going to be in the bunk. The rest of the time, they are laying down in the back of the pen. They're not bawling. They're not crawling through the fence. But it really helps if they consistently are fed at the same time every day, and they know when that feed truck's coming, then they do pretty well with this. So just to summarize the key points, the energy density is the key to limit feeding, okay? You have to have the right amount of energy in that diet to limit feed, or they will lose weight. Lactation increases energy needs considerably, and if you're still feeding in confinement, limit feeding, when you go into lactation, you're going to have to make adjustments. Consider early weaning options, because that may be what makes this work for you, is where you can go with those calves. Maybe you have a really nice, lush, irrigated pivot somewhere, but you don't have enough for pairs, but you could put your calves out there. You know, what do you have to work with? What can you do? If you do confine the calves when they're small, you got to make sure they can reach the water in the feed, and you got to have ample bunk space for this. And I guess I didn't put on the slides, but this is one of those critical times. It's really good to separate those young cows from the old cows, because some of those old girls get pretty good at figuring out how to get more than their share. And so it really helps to separate either timid cows or younger cows or thin cows into their own group, so that competition's a little more fair. And then be consistent on your feeding routine. And I guess we'll do questions tonight.